ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Text 4. But there's number 3 on there, so maybe I got the wrong verse, or maybe. But we can repeat number 3 in any case. Let's do that. Which is the correct verse? There's two yesterday. Okay. Well, I prepared the wrong verse. That's okay. Tasmad bhavantam mama sangshayartham. Tasmad bhavantam mama sangshayartham. Prakshyami pashyad adhuna subodham. Prakshyami pashyad adhuna subodham. Adhyatma yoga grathitam tavoktam. Tasmad, therefore, bhavantam, to you, mama, of me, sangshaya, artham, the subject matter that is not clear to me. Prakshyami, I shall submit. Pashya, afterwards. Adhuna, now. Subodham, so that it can be clearly understood. Adhyatma yoga, of mystic instruction for self-realization. Gratitam, as composed. Tava, your. Uktam, speech. Akhyahi, please explain again. Kautuhalachetasa, whose mind is very inquisitive to understand the mystery of such statements. Me, to me. Translation appropriate by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear difficult to understand. Please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive and I want to understand this clearly. Please repeat. Whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult to understand. Please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive, and I want to understand this clearly. Purport. The Vedic literature instructs, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sheya uttamam. An intelligent man must be very inquisitive to know the transcendental science deeply. Therefore, one must approach a guru, a spiritual master. Although Jad Bharata explained everything to Maharaj Jahugana, it appears that his intelligence was not perfect enough to understand clearly. He therefore requested a further explanation. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya, the student must approach a spiritual master and surrender unto him fully. Pranipatena, he must also question him in order to understand his instructions. Pariprasnena, one should not only surrender to the spiritual master, but also render loving service unto him, sevaya, so that the spiritual master will be pleased with the student and explain the transcendental subject matter more clearly. A challenging spirit before the spiritual master should be avoided if one is at all interested in learning the Vedic instructions in depth. Om Jnanam Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Danati Svapatantikam. So I feel very embarrassed to speak in front of such a distinguished audience. Many of whom compose my spiritual masters. So this verse is very pertinent because it is about the spiritual master. So I beg for their blessings so I can say something useful. This is a conversation between Rahuna Maharaj and Jad Bharat. Maharaj Rahugana has just finished giving a full exposition of philosophy to Jad Bharat. But Jad Bharat, being a king, sort of philosophy isn't his area of specialty, at least not spiritual knowledge. He's maybe more engaged in politics and other things. And he's just coming to spiritual life. He's unable to understand his words. So he's asking Rahugana to repeat these instructions, to repeat them very in simple language. So we find this happening quite often in the Bhagavatam, where, for example, in the story of Narad Muni and Prachinam Harishad, Narad Muni explains this metaphor of Puranjana, but after explaining this metaphor, Prachinam Harishad doesn't understand it. So he says, can you re-explain it in simple language? So here, then, Maharaj Rahugana, then, again, he's given the philosophy, and then in order to explain the philosophy, then he uses allegories or metaphors to explain this. Oh, I'm sorry. sorry about this. It is Jad Bharat who is the saint, and Maharaj Rahugana is the king. I'm sorry. Jad Bharat begins to explain this using a metaphor or an analogy. So this is the case in many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Bhagavatam will first explain something in terms of philosophy, in terms of spiritual philosophical points, but then it will use metaphors or allegories to explain those things in a way that we can understand. Just like a teacher would teach his or her students, or parents would teach their children. When there's something difficult to understand, then you use an example or an analogy, and that same thing that is very difficult becomes very simple. So what metaphor then does Maharaj Rahugana, Jad Bharat use to explain this to Maharaj Rahugana after these instructions? He uses a particular analogy to explain what he's been speaking about. Yes, life in the forest. The material world he compares to a forest. And the struggles in this material world, to all the difficulties that a person in the forest who's traveling alone in this very difficult forest undergoes. He compares human beings to a caravan of merchants, living beings, to a caravan of merchants who leave their original home, just like merchants leave the town and go to forest to collect wood. Right? They go there. And on the way, they face so many difficulties. They're bitten by various insects. They have to cross the steep mountain pass. In the steep mountain pass, there's guards, there's tax collectors on the way, so they have to run away from these people. They get beaten on the way. And finally, there's a fire, and in this fire, they're running, trying to become free of, trying to avoid being scorched by this fire. And at this time, then on the other side, there's, you know, a big mountain, and they have to run up this mountain. And it's to no avail, right? They keep on, you know, suffering like this. Until finally, it says, they become frustrated by this experience of this material world, this experience of the material forest. And it says, and they finally betake to the path of the bees, right? The bees, who are compared to who? The devotees. Why? Because the devotees are taking the honey from the lotus feet, from Krishna's lotus feet. Right? Just like the bees. In the forest, everyone is struggling, right? It's a struggle for existence, except for the bees. The bees are traveling very smoothly, and they're sitting on one flower and taking its, you know, honey and then going to the next flower. So even though they're in the same place, they remain unaffected. They remain unmoved by all those disturbances. And they transcend it. So finally, these merchants figure out that the bees, they know how to survive in the forest. So they take to the path of the bees and take to the honey at the lotus feet of Krishna. So in the Bhagavatam as well, this world is described as a hard struggle for existence. Right? So Darwin got that part right. He got the first part right, that it is the struggle for existence. Everyone is struggling. And this is what Jad Bharat gets across to Maharaj Jahugna, due to the identification with this body, every living being is feeling fatigued, or is feeling tired, or is feeling in suffering, or different types of pains. But in fact, these do not exist, because they're simply related to the body. So, in his first instruction to Maharaj Jahugna, Maharaj Jahugna criticizes Jad Bharat by saying that, you know, it seems like he's sarcastic, right? He has this palanquin carrier who's very, you know, doesn't know how to carry this palanquin properly, is making all sorts of mistakes. So Jahugna tells Jad Bharat that, oh, you must be very fatigued. Right? You seem like you're an old man. Your body is very thin and very lean. So Jad Bharat responds that in fact what you have said is incorrect, because though fatigued is experienced by the body, he says, all of these experiences are unreal. Right? He says that in fact they do not exist. So Rahugna, being the disciple, this is, as we'll see in the next verse, this is the question that he asks. He can't understand this. He says, but if you said that they're perceived by the body, and they're perceived by us, this fatigue is perceived by the soul, then in what way is it unreal? Right? It's experienced. Nevertheless, we, the soul, are experiencing this. It may be that it's actually the body that's being fatigued, but that experience is real. So in what way are you saying that in fact it is unreal? How these statements that you're saying greatly disturb my mind, because they go against common sense. Right? So Jad Bharat then explains, and many times in the Bhagavatam we'll find that it describes the world as unreal, asat. It just does not exist. Right? The Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, it says that which doesn't exist in the beginning or doesn't exist at the end has no existence in the middle period. Right? So the world, because it's created and it's because it's destroyed, in the middle time it has no existence. So many times the Bhagavatam describes the world as unreal. But we aren't Mayavadis, right? The Bhagavatam isn't speaking Mayavad philosophy. So in what way is the world unreal? Right? But it still uses this word asat, or unreal. And Srila Prabhupada also, many times he uses this word unreal to describe material pleasures, to describe the material world. In fact, one one person who wasn't, you could say, so favorable to Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books or something. He was saying this one time as a, you know, that Srila Prabhupada, he uses this word unreal to describe the material world, but this is, we don't use this word. Vaishnavas, they wouldn't use this word. He was from a different sort of sampradaya, you could say. And but the point is that the Bhagavatam is using this word unreal. It's not that Srila Prabhupada is doing this. The Srimad Bhagavatam itself is using this word. So the Bhagavatam describes the world as unreal in the sense that it's temporary, right? That which is temporary is in fact unreal. Not in the sense of, you could say, in a ontological unreality, that it has no existence, it's only, it's not, like Shankaracharya would explain it, that in fact nothing exists other than Brahman, and everything is one, all variety is one. No, the Bhagavatam says is there is variety, everything is one, yes, everything is coming from Krishna, so in that sense everything is Krishna, but within that oneness is variety. In fact, the Vaishnavas, they criticize the Mayavadis for being dualists, right? Because they say, the Mayavadis say that Maya or Krishna's illusory energy or this material world does not exist within Brahman. So ultimately they come down to two things. They come down to Brahman and that which is not Brahman. You know, what is, they actually are dualists, in fact, because they see no place for this material world. But the fact is that it exists. So then they have two, they're dualists. But the Vaishnavacharyas and the Srimad Bhagavatam, they say that yes, everything is coming from the Lord. But all these manifestations or different varieties that come from the Lord, right? They're His different energies. And the world is unreal in the sense that it is temporary, right? It has a beginning and it has an end. And that which is unreal has no factual existence, right? Because if, you know, let's say, I see a cloud in the sky, right? And then that cloud vanishes. Then I say, the cloud exists. Well, the cloud doesn't exist. Right? It's no longer there. So then the question comes, well, does it exist or does it not exist? But it existed for that time, but factually speaking, it doesn't exist because it doesn't exist later on. So in that sense, in the sense of temporality, it describes this world as unreal. Something that is changing. This material world is described as samsara, right? Samsara comes from the root srij, which means to flow, or which means to change, right? So this material world is described like a very fast flowing river. And if you've seen a very strong river, a very, very strong current, sometimes you see this if you go up in the Himalayas where the Ganges flows down very quickly. My father and I, we went there one time. And it's flowing so quickly that they don't let anyone bathe in the river, because the moment you're going to put even your foot into the river, then into the Ganges River, it won't be able to stay there for a minute. So you'll be swept into this river. So this material world is changing so quickly. It is changing in such a you could say. Quick and it's just flickering, right? Like Govindadas says, it's like a drop of water shaking on a leaf. Then in fact all the things that happen in this world, they vanish so quickly that they're just like unreal, right? They don't exist. Just like if we see something that like in a movie, a movie is a set of pictures that changes very quickly. So if there's one picture in there that doesn't fit in the movie, then we may not notice it because it's changing so quickly that we don't even notice that picture is there. They say there's something like 200 pictures per second in a movie. So it seems to us that this thing is, you know, moving like, you know, it's not still. but it's a movie is composed of thousands and millions of still pictures. So if there's one picture in there that's wrong, we won't notice it, right? Because it moves so quickly, you don't even notice that it exists. So in the same way, it's Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. In the same way, this material world, here the Bhagavatam is giving a sort of a point of, you could say, perception that the material world is changing so quickly that in fact all the things that happen in this world are not very significant, right? They're unreal. They have no factual existence. So the spiritual master, here Prabhupada in the purport is speaking about this, the importance of the spiritual master. The spiritual master helps us distinguish between this real and unreal. Right? This is the spiritual master, Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita in one place, he describes that spiritual life or self-realization means seeing things as they are. Right? So it's not trying to get some sort of conception in our mind, some sort of false conception. Or even a true conception. It's just seeing things as they are. Because ultimately we don't know why things are the way they are. Right? We cannot say, you know, why don't I have three arms rather than two arms? It's the case that it is. We have two arms. And Krishna has two arms. And why is the world made like this, that there's earth, water, fire, air, ether? Why isn't there, you know, three elements rather than five elements? Why is it that, you know, I think it was maybe Jagannath Das Babaji, Gorgeshwar Das Babaji who said, if we keep on asking this question, why, then ultimately one day we'll become an atheist. Right? Because ultimately there's no answer to these questions of why. So ultimately it's the way Krishna is. Krishna is it's the way we are. Things are the way they are. Right? But spiritual life, what the spiritual master helps us is to help things, help us see things as they are. Right? To see, in fact, to be able to see that in fact everything is related to Krishna. Right? That in fact everything is none other than Krishna and his energies. So this is the key role of the spiritual master, to destroy this illusion, right? To the spiritual master who is inquisitive and who is submissive and humble, the spiritual master destroys this illusion of separateness from Krishna. Right? In this Chaturshloki of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu, he describes what is our illusion. Right? What is our illusion that is the problem? You could say the human problem. This problem that the spiritual master, in this case Lord Vishnu is the spiritual master, Brahma, this problem that the spiritual master resolves. This is in the second verse of the Chaturshloki, where Lord Vishnu says, Rite artham yat pratiyeta, pratiyeta cha atmani, tad vidyad atmano mayam, yatha bhasa yatha tama. So he says, Rite artham yat pratiyeta. He says, that which appears to be without artham, right, without value. Yat pratiyeta cha atmani, that which appears to be not in me. Right? So that which appears to be without value, and that which appears to be not in me. Tad vidyat, know that as my maya, as my illusory potency, yatha bhasa yatha tama, right? Which is like a reflection, which is like darkness. Right? So, the first part is saying that which appears to be without value. Right. So, what's that? What appears to be without value? What is unreal? That is this material world, right? We were saying this thing that is changing. This is unreal. This. These things that have a beginning and an end, these bodies, all these things, they appear to be without value because they have no permanent existence. And that which appears to be not in me, right? It's not in my own self. Tad vidyat, know that as my maya, as my illusory energy, like a reflection, like darkness. So Krishna here is saying, Lord Vishnu is saying that the problem is that these things, they appear to be separate. What is Maya? What is illusion? What is our illusion? Our illusion is that we think of something as separate from Krishna. Right? They appear to be separate from me. But in fact, what are they? This is, they are none other than my own Maya. Right? So that means they're Krishna's own energy, because he's saying this is my own power. And then it gives two analogies to describe what this is. It says this is like a reflection. Right? A reflection, Shankaracharya also described the world as a reflection. The reflection is not unreal. But the reason why the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the world as a reflection is because the reflection cannot exist. The reflection does not exist without, it has no meaning to its existence without that which it reflects. So it shows a state of dependence, right? That it's not even that, oh, this world is in some ways related with Krishna. No, it has intrinsically no meaning. The world has no meaning without Krishna. Right? Just like this, it's impossible to speak of a reflection without that by which it reflects. Right? You cannot speak of a tree in a lake, right? The reflected tree in a lake without the tree itself. The reflection depends on its existence on the tree. In the same way, although many times we think of darkness as the absence of the sun, of light, but our Acharya is explaining that in the same way darkness cannot exist without light. Right? Jiva Goswami says that darkness also is a reality. It's Krishna's energy, it's real. It's not. There cannot be the absence of God. Right? In the same way there cannot be the absence of anything. There always is something. So that also is Krishna's energy. So the point being that nothing in this material world is bad, right? Nothing is intrinsically bad. We generally think that matter is bad. All these things. Nothing is bad. What is the problem? What is bad is our seeing it as separate from Krishna. Right? That is what is bad. Our being unable to connect this, to connect the material world, and to see the actual position of the material world as related with Krishna. So in this way, the spiritual master, he helps us in seeing everything in relationship with Krishna. Right? That how do we connect everything with Krishna? How do we see everything in relationship with Krishna? And how do we destroy this illusion of our false conception of reality? One wonderful example is one time Srila Prabhupada was invited to this TV station, radio station, right? And this man was very famous for giving his interviewees, the people he interviewed, a very tough time, right? To ask them very difficult questions, very embarrassing questions, right, on television. So the devotees were thinking whether or not to take Srila Prabhupada to this person, because they were afraid he would be disrespectful to Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada decided to go. Srila Prabhupada was always ready for a challenge, for a good fight with the materialist. So he decided to go, and sure enough, this interviewing agent was in his full form, right? He was ready to do something, attack. So first question he asked Srila Prabhupada was that, why do you leave your country and come to our country to give us knowledge when the death rate in your country is so high? Right? I mean, you come from India, the third world country, the death rate is so high. So Srila Prabhupada replied, he says, no, the death rate is the same everywhere, 100%. Right? So the interviewer, he didn't know what to say, what to do, after that. So then he asked another question. He said, then he was taken aback a little, like he didn't know what to say exactly. On radio you can't have a break. So he had a lady assistant was helping, was sort of, you know, was there helping him. And so he couldn't say anything, couldn't think of what to say. So then she said something. She said, "Oh, well, you know, why do all of you keep shaved heads, right? You know, bald heads. You know, it's a common phenomenon in your movement." And then Srila Prabhupada, he said, "Well, you know, it's better to have a cool head than cold feet." Right, because she was wearing a very high skirt. He said, what is needed is a cool head, you know, and we have that. So that's, you know, this is the right, you know, right place to keep it cool. So both of them were taken aback. And then I forget, the interview asked one more question from Srila Prabhupada. It completely escapes me. And Srila Prabhupada also gave a very, very quick and wonderful answer. And he was taken aback. So then for the next 10 minutes, Srila Prabhupada had the air. He was just speaking, no questions. He was just speaking transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Right? So so many instances like this, where Srila Prabhupada would cut people's illusion, right, so quickly. Another example is... One time, Rameshwar Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, you know, why is this world, why isn't Krishna's mercy there when we're serving him? Because every time we serve him, or as we're serving him, then there's always some turmoil. You know, after a little bit, you know, things stay fine for a little bit, and then there's some big problem, and something really messes up, and then again, there's some big problem. So, you know, why isn't there that we find some, you know, Krishna giving us grace so that things can just stay good, so there's more peace. And Srila Prabhupada says, well, actually, this world is constantly turmoil, right? This world is constantly, constantly changing. But the reason why sometimes we get a peaceful situation is because Krishna's mercy is there, right? So, same thing there, that in fact... he was thinking that, oh, the natural position in this material world is a peaceful situation, sort of a steady, dependable situation. But Srila Prabhupada was saying the opposite, that no, actually, in fact, it is the nature of this world is that it's flowing, right? It's constant, it's no permanence, no peacefulness. But by chance, if we do experience something that is some relief, then that is Krishna's mercy. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes this world as being controlled by time, right? And it's so amazing that the whole universe, in some ways, is described in this way, that time is a wheel, and the entire universe is a wheel, right? And the different planets are like different ants on this wheel, right? So as this wheel turns, it crushes everything that goes. So it's not even just that, you know, time is there, but the entire universe in some ways is just this wheel of time, right? A wheel will never stay steady if you keep it rolling. It'll always just keep on rolling, right? So to expect it that it'll stay in one place is the wrong conception, because that's not what the world is, right? It describes that just like this in this fast-flowing river, just like different sticks come together and are separated, in the same way we come together in certain places and then we are, you know, separated by the waves of time. So in this way, if a person wants to sort of avoid this great calamity of this material world, right, then one must take shelter of the spiritual master, right? Of the devotees of the Lord. And Krishna is so desperate to give us, to make us take the devotees of the Lord seriously and to take their shelter, that he's willing to give us any sort of tribulation so that we come to that realization that, you know, I can't do this alone. I have to surrender to a devotee. And I just have to take shelter of a devotee of the Lord. We have this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that we were discussing some time back, where, you know, Krishna, how he says that, so one who I especially favor, I give him so many difficulties, right? I you know, take away his wealth and all these things. And I was wondering, you know, why does Krishna do this? Or he does it to some, he may not do it to others. then if we read the verse after that, the next verse, it describes that Krishna says that and then by doing this, then ultimately that person will take shelter of my pure devotees. So his whole purpose in doing this, in fact, is just like he's not a jealous god or a horrible god. His whole purpose is that he's so desperate to us to take the shelter of the devotees that all of the purpose of all of that difficulty or suffering that Krishna may put us through is just to make us humble enough where we realize that we don't have any other shelter, any other means in this world other than the grace of Krishna's devotee. So therefore, it's described that therefore the disciple, to show this eagerness to get spiritual knowledge, to show in fact that as we find in the songs of the Vaishnava Acharyas, that they actually had this feeling, that in fact we really mean it, that we really need the shelter of these devotees and we're desperate for it. The disciple should offer not only ask questions from the spiritual master, but should offer service. Right? And that service will please the spiritual master, and through that pleasure, one will gain spiritual knowledge and will gain spiritual realization. Right? And this is in fact the message of the Bhagavatam. If we read through all of the different, this was sort of one realization, small realization, little realization that I had. Studying the Bhagavatam and just reading through it, that one theme that comes up again and again in every narrative, in every story, in most of the instructions as well, is the importance of the saintly souls. Right? We find this in the story, especially of Narad Muni, right? That he's in some ways the hero of the Bhagavatam, Narad Muni, where he's born in a Shudra family, in a very low caste family. He's the son of a maidservant. And it was his mood of submissive surrender to these saintly souls that visited the ashram, due to which he became the saint of bhakti. Right? He became the greatest of all devotees. And then the rest of the Bhagavatam, in some ways, most of the rest of the Bhagavatam, is his disciples. Right? Prahlad Maharaj is his disciple. And Prahlad Maharaj becomes a great devotee by hearing from Narad Muni. At that time, he couldn't serve him because Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb. But he hears from him. Right? Dhruva Maharaj, which is almost the whole of the fourth canto, is also Narad Muni's disciple, where he learns from Narad Muni and surrenders to Narad Muni, and because of that, he becomes self-realized. And then so many other examples in the Bhagavatam where it is this, like Srila Prabhupada is saying, is this pariprashnena and pranipatena, these two things that lead to the, you could say, the perfection of the devotees described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is, let me see. Yep, it's time to end now. So if there's, this is sort of the main theme of Srila Prabhupada's purport here, that we should serve the spiritual master and take shelter of him. So if there's any comments by the esteemed Vaishnavas here, or questions. One thing is that it's very nice to have Krishna Kshetra Prabhu's association there sometimes in Oxford when he comes and visits us. And he sort of set the way for most of us. He was one of the first students there at the center there because it's very difficult many times when you enter a new field of study. I found this is, you could say, sort of my experience, that it's quite difficult to understand how do you present Krishna consciousness in this setting, right? Because really sort of writing a dissertation. That's what I've been doing since the last 4 or 5 years. I realize what it's doing is all what we're doing is what other devotees are doing. Other devotees are taking Srila Prabhupada's books, they're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and they're presenting it for different audiences. Right? So when we go, we're invited to, you know, a person, you're invited to speak at a yoga center, let's say, then it's the same philosophy. We take Srila Prabhupada's books and we present it in a language that's appealing to people who like to stretch and stand on their heads and be lean and thin. So we word it that way, and we make the philosophy attractive, so that then they'll be attracted to reading Srila Prabhupada's books, right? Coming, you know, finding out what's the source of this wonderful philosophy. So it's the same idea there, that there our audience is people who like to read a lot, who like to study a lot, who have degrees, and who like to sit in dark rooms for hours and hours, and in libraries for hours and hours, and fill their minds with so many things. So this type of audience is called academics. Rather than using their hands and their feet, they like to use their brains. So, more. For that audience, we need to try to understand this philosophy, try to understand it ourselves, and then present it in their language, right? So that they can, oh, this is very, very good. You know, it's look at this wonderful word that he used, soteriology. Right? That was one of the words I learned at the beginning. So to present it in that language, so that it's something familiar, right? We're not afraid of things that are familiar to us. So if someone puts a very different thing, a different philosophy, in a language that's very familiar, then that person will be attracted to that. But at the same time, while doing that, we need to be chaste to the message, right? We need to be chaste to what is actually our philosophy, what is the Siddhanta. So to do the both of them is can be quite tricky, can be quite difficult, right? So, especially for a new person like myself, new devotee like myself, that to try to make this bridge, this connection, can be difficult. So it's very helpful to have sort of examples before us that who have done it, who have sort of preached in this area and shown us this sort of how to do both. And so my particular topic that I was working on and with the help of the Krishna Kshetra Prabhu and the devotees there, like Shona Krishi Prabhu, Gopinath Acharya, Mother Anuradha, Mother Meru, she was there for many years with us. So, was on the topic of Maya, right? So, I've been absorbed in Maya since the last 6 years. I didn't, before coming to Oxford and Stanley, I didn't have a background in Sanskrit or in religion or in philosophy, but I did have a good background in Maya. So I could, speak as an authority on this subject. So it was on Krishna's Maya. How is Maya described in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Because one of my sort of inspirations for doing that topic was that Srila Prabhupada, in some places, he says that preaching means turning impersonalist to personalist, right? So his main focus, and we see in his books, is to in his pranam mantras also, is to remove impersonalism from this world. He wants to respond, attack the impersonalists even more than the atheists, right? Because in fact, the atheists are just impersonalists. They believe in a God. It may be Big Bang or the original laws of nature, but that God is just impersonal. Right? They just don't put a face to that God. It's the laws of physics. So ultimately, atheism is also impersonalism, Prabhupada writes in one place, because everyone has to believe in something absolute. It's just that they don't give a title to it, don't give a name to it. So impersonalism is called the doctrine of Mayavad, right? It's the doctrine of Maya. So they sort of misinterpret the Srimad Bhagavatam's doctrine of Maya. Right? They say Maya is unreality, it's falsity. And so then when Krishna says in the Bhagavatam many, many times, he says that I appear in this world by my Maya, then they say that, oh, in fact, see, Krishna's appearance, Krishna's form is Maya. It is illusion, it is unreal. Right? That's because they've misinterpreted this word, Maya. That it, according to our Vaishnava understanding, Maya simply means the power of the Lord, right? Krishna's power. We have Krishna and Krishna's Maya, Krishna's power. Now this Maya may act in an elusive way, right, in a very difficult or illusory way. It puts us into illusion, but it's very real. Right? Just like if someone does a magic show, right, the magic puts us into illusion, but the magic itself is very real. Right? That's why we like to attend magic shows, because it's something real, it's a matter of experience. So it puts us into illusion, right? It's very elusive. And even in the spiritual world, in the sense of yoga, maya, Krishna does so many wonderful, mysterious pastimes. Not illusory, but very mysterious. So in the spiritual world also, there's his spiritual maya, right? His divine maya, yoga maya. So this thesis was sort of to show that, no, in fact, the Bhagavatam is giving a message of personalism, right? That Krishna is a person, Krishna has many powers, Krishna has many shaktis, and right now we're covered by his maya, right? That's a human problem. The human condition or the human problem is that we're in a state of illusion, right? We're in this world of maya. So it's been my good fortune that I can have a topic that is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, so it makes the study very fulfilling and interesting, because my only realization sort of after this is that there's just no book like the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? After 6 years, now it's like I wish I could start again. Right? Now it's 6 years is maybe enough to study a few verses, not even that, of the Bhagavatam. It's just like there's, it's like an ocean. It's just like no end to the beauty of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. Mine was a topical study, so I was looking at this word, especially this word Maya, how it's used in the Bhagavatam and in different ways. So it spanned all 12 cantos. I focused on a few sections, like I focused on the Puranjana section, on this section of the forest of material enjoyment, in the 11th canto, one or two chapters. So yeah, so there's based on where there were discussions on the human condition and Maya, those were main areas. Yes, and last one. A short answer to that would be like becoming like the bees, right? That Jad Bharat describes is by taking shelter of Krishna. Because Srila Prabhupada, he describes many times that how because, like Jad Bharat himself, because he had understood the nature of this world, then he wasn't disturbed by it, right? Because he had seen that, oh, in fact, this world is what it is, it's changing and all these things. When Maharaja Jahugna criticized in so many ways, he wasn't disturbed by it because he thought, oh, well, this is just criticism to my physical body, who I'm not. So the devotee can sort of find this balance by understanding what the material world is, by understanding the material world as it is, and by taking shelter of Krishna, you know, taking shelter of his lotus feet. So in that way, the devotee becomes fearless, right? Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. That's the idea that the devotee is, even though the devotee still experiences the tribulations, but the devotee is fearless because the devotee understands that Krishna is protecting me and whatever is happening is for my best. You know, my plan is perfect. Krishna's plan is perfect. So, yes. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Oh, one more thing I would like to present to the devotees. Tell the devotees, I'm very sorry about this. Just yesterday, we saw that my mother's book is now in the VLS. My mother has been, since the last few years, she's been working on this book, Homeschooling Krishna's Children. So I wanted to tell all the devotees here that we've been waiting for this book and now it's out. So please give your blessings and thank you.